Welcome in, everyone, to the 74th episode of the Deep Dive Dynasty Podcast. As always, we are your two hosts, Toby and Colin. Toby, how was week one of football for you?
It was amazing, man. Despite a power outage in the middle of the afternoon games that you and I had to contend with, my life is just astronomically better with the addition of football in it.
Can't agree more. Was obviously incredibly exciting, and we're only going to talk about the games we just watched more, as today we're going to be talking through some buys and sells of different players. Basically, it's reactions to what happened in these week one games. As we talked about last week, players' values change very quickly, and now is a great time to capitalize on it. So yeah, we're just going to go through some players that we have some takes on before Toby, of course, gives me his dynasty buy of the week this week. As always, before we get into it, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Deep Dive Dynasty. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, make sure to leave us a review down below. Toby, I know you can talk about this guy all day long.
Yeah.
Why don't we start off with the top guy I put on the list, someone that I tweeted even this week. I hope someone sells him to me. It's Najee Harris.
Oh, Najee, man. He's just... I think we've all seen the stat now that he played 100% of every offensive snap that the Steelers had.
Ridiculous. Like, that just is unheard of.
It's unheard of, and yet I'm not shocked. He's clearly the best running back. We Benny clearly Snell. Understand that. No.
Come on.
Do not mention that man's name. He will fade into the ether. Najee Harris is going to have to deal with an ostensibly broken offensive line. I watched.
Yeah, they didn't look good.
They looked bad. And the issue with Najee, at least in this week one, is that he wasn't able to make something out of nothing on the number of attempts that he had. Ben's throwing him the ball behind, he's trying to snag these one-handers, it just wasn't fully clicking. I 100% do not think you should sell. I'm with Colin on this. If we can get this man, I mean, we already have him in Dynasty, but if you can get Najee, because people are going, oh, you know, he's in any way a bust. People haven't watched the game. Najee did not look exhilarating, and I understand that, but I don't think he had even the opportunity to impress us the way that I think he's able to.
Obviously, with certain players you talk about, there's, you know, buy highs and buy lows. Like, usually you're buying low and selling high, because in Dynasty, this player was just drafted in your rookie drafts, and obviously that was with an early pick, so you're not going to be able to buy incredibly low, maybe very slightly lower than the price that was paid for him, you know, a few months ago. You're going to have to pay up for Najee. But really what this is us telling you is it's worth it, because the offensive line, whether it is good or bad, Najee absolutely can overcome that deficiency. And even if the offense, because I don't think Big Ben looked that good last week either, even if that offense doesn't turn it around and they aren't as good as they have been the last couple of years, other than that year where we had Duck Hodges playing, of course. Najee Harris is absolutely going to be in that high-end running back one conversation to me if they continue to utilize him the way they did week one.
Yeah, the more important number is that he was used on 100% of the offensive snaps. Exactly. I'm unconcerned that he got 5.0 in fantasy. And I understand that's not what you wanted. If you played him, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah,
but in Dynasty, you watched his utilization, and you gotta be excited.
Yeah, I'm trying to get him in all formats. I think it's a little easier to get him in redraft right now, and I'm especially buying him there. But yeah, even for Dynasty, this is just a player that I'm really confident will have a very solid career. The next guy I wanted to talk about, another running back, is Ezekiel Elliott. And anytime a player underperforms in one of those spotlight games, and there is no larger spotlight game than the season opener, and he was playing in that season opener against probably the most difficult run defense in the league in Tampa. That defensive line is nasty. This is no surprise to anyone. Obviously, it won them a Super Bowl last year. So I knew going into the week that Zeke was probably not going to have the greatest game. He was up against it for sure, but other than the fact that, like Najee, he didn't put up a lot of fantasy points, I saw pretty much everything I wanted. I know a lot of people were saying, like, oh, it doesn't look like he has too much juice or whatever. I didn't think he looked that slow or anything. He looked at least fine to me. But what matters a lot more was he did play on 84% of snaps, which isn't Najee Harris level, but that is like very elite level starter snap percentage. And Unfortunately, a lot of those snaps that he had to play because of this defensive line that Tampa has, he was blocking, which is something he's very good at, but they basically needed that extra offensive lineman because there's just so many guys you need to stop, and clearly their game plan, as every team's game plan will be against Tampa, is going to be, okay, we can't really run on them, so we got to throw on them. So that's what they did. They had Zeke block a lot, and they threw on the Bucs all night long. And honestly, their offense looked very good. Another big question mark with Dak was, is this offense going to be as elite as it was in the first half of last year? And sure, they didn't blow Tampa out of the water. They ended up losing the game. The offense looks really good to me.
Yeah, I mean, they lost the game by two, and they were winning with, you know, seconds left.
Exactly. Like, I just think this looks like it probably is the best or second best offense in the league, and Dak is still going to be the clear lead of this backfield. Sure, Tony Pollard still looks solid, as we knew he would be, but the fact that he still looked decent to me, I didn't see a huge fall off from Zeke this year. I think he'll be solid. The offense looks great, and this game scheme is what really limited his fantasy points. That's why I'm definitely trying to target him right now, because I think this is probably the lowest you'll be able to buy him this season. Also, as a side note, he did run quite a few routes. He never saw the target share that he normally does, but he actually was still out there running a lot of routes, so I think that is a great sign that down the rest of the season, he will see more and more targets. So yeah, he's just a clear buy for me, assuming I'm trying to win right now.
You gotta hold out on hope there. Mm-hmm. Zeke is going to be better than he was that first week, and he really wasn't that bad.
Yeah, one of my predictions before this year was that Zeke was going to lead the league in rushing touchdowns, and he didn't get any opportunities, maybe one or two, but obviously they didn't score any rushing touchdowns, but I still hold that that prediction is very possibly true, because I think this offense could be great, and their schedule really opens up pretty soon. A third running back that I wanted to include on this list is, again, largely based on snap share and the fact that he played a lot more than I feared he may, and that was Daryl Henderson. This, again, is a more short-term buy, but we all have to remember that even going into next year, sure, maybe he's sharing that backfield with Cam Akers, but Cam Akers' injury is not just a, okay, he'll be back to full force next year. He might not, so there is still upside that he can be an even more long-term asset. But mostly I'm buying him for the short term. And what I see in the short term is that this offense looks really good to start. Yeah. I think Stafford looked impressive, and I think they will be an efficient offense. I think they'll be giving Henderson a ton of very, very positive game scripts, because not only is their offense good, but obviously their defense is good. And then the big fear going into this week is, okay, they bought Sony Michel. How's he going to do? First of all, not that good. And secondly, he didn't even play until there was like 5 minutes left in the game.
It
was
one carry for 2 yards from Sony Michel.
Yeah. And he saw 4 snaps in the game, and they were all in the second half of the fourth quarter, like the very end of the game.
And I would go as far as to say that the reason he didn't come in sooner is because Daryl Henderson was playing fantastic. Mm-hmm. He was getting the snaps. He was doing what he needed to get done. Popped into the end zone when he got the goal line work.
Yep.
Daryl Henderson's what the team needs.
Yeah, he impressed me for sure. And he did only see one target in that game. It was one reception. He did catch it. But what I have seen throughout the rest of Daryl Henderson's career and even in college is that he can be used as a receiver. I don't think he's elite at it or anything. But I expect him to get more than one catch a game, especially if he's out there as often as he was in this 1 week. So the arrow's pointing up for me. He was someone that I had absolute concerns about before the season, but he definitely has become a target, someone that I think is worth it and can help you win a championship this year.
Next up on our list, we have, well, an entire team. Colin has written down in the notes, and without even knowing his rationale, I can kind of explain why. And by now, players consist of offensive members of the Green Bay Packers, okay? Week one, they were the Green Bay Slackers, if you will. Terrible performances all around.
Yeah, atrocious.
But this is Dynasty. And when people tilt is the time to buy. Davante Adams did not look bad.
No, he looked great, actually.
Davante Adams is still Davante Adams. Aaron Jones never really had the opportunity to get going.
Mm-hmm. He didn't necessarily play well, but
Didn't necessarily play well. I have concerns. Yeah, didn't have anything game-breaking. And Aaron Rodgers, post-game press conference, unflummoxed. He said, you know what? 16 more games to play.
Exactly.
And that's true. And if you have people going, oh my goodness, I've totally overvalued these Green Bay players. Devontae Adams shouldn't have been the number one wide receiver. And you can get people trading for members of the Green Bay Packers based off of one result. That's the time. NFL Week 1 always produces a result like this. Mm-hmm. I cannot remember a year in my entire life where Week 1 did not have one score when I look at and go, well, I know nothing about football. It happens week in, sorry, year in and year out.
Yeah, last year, Week 1, the team that ended up with only one win on the year, the Jacksonville Jaguars, beat the eventual playoff team and very solid roster of the Indianapolis Colts. So yeah, there was always some just dud performances. And this extends also to Robert Tonyan. But yes, all four of those guys, I'm still absolutely after. And clearly with someone like Devontae Adams or even Aaron Rodgers or Aaron Jones, these stud players, you're not getting them for super cheap. But Adams should be valued exactly the same he was a week ago. And so whatever discount you can get on him from one dud week, week one just leaves a longer impression. So just go and get him.
I think there's a decent chance if it's, you know, in redraft formats or people panicking, dumping Tonyan to the waiver wire, go get that man. Because he's going to be a better streaming option than, you know, almost anyone out there.
For sure. If that happens, absolutely. He's still in that like top six or seven tight ends for me. Moving over to some wide receivers now. The first guy that I wanted to point out who just really impressed me, it's actually in the same offense that we already talked about with Daryl Henderson, and that's Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp in redraft is a wide receiver one to me after watching his week one performance. I think he does have quite a mind meld with Matthew Stafford, and as much as Chris Collinsworth really loved pointing that out, that they, you know, they're best buddies apparently.
They had breakfast together this morning.
On top of what I already said about this offense looking really good, previously, I would say Kupp was mostly the number two target. Yes, Jared Goff loved to pass his way too very often, but more so I found that Robert Woods was the top target on the team. And with Stafford, through this 1 week, it seems like Kupp was his first read almost all the time. Unless there was a designed play for someone else, he was looking at Cooper Kupp first. And it showed because he had 10 targets, 9 receptions, put up a really good day. Clearly, this is another player. You're not buying low. This isn't someone who had a bad performance and therefore you need to go get him. This is a player that had a great performance. And this is the right time to buy high because he probably still isn't viewed as one of those wide receiver ones. And I think that's where he's going to finish by the end of the year. A much, much deeper player down the list. And this is probably the only person we're going to talk about that could even be on your dynasty waivers. And
that is
KJ Osborne. KJ Osborne is a day three pick from last season that we actually quite liked coming out. He's on the Minnesota Vikings, in case you weren't paying super close this week. And he saw 9 targets. And
it's a lot.
Yeah, this is a new offensive scheme. They have a new offensive coordinator. And whereas last year, whoever the number three was, I guess it was Ola BC Johnson, he was irrelevant. Yeah. They had 2 tight ends that they were rolling out there pretty often. I assume that Kyle Rudolph would have been that third target on that team, unless you're counting Dalvin Cook. And it seems like KJ Osborne has taken that over. In this new scheme, we're obviously only one game in. Adam Thielen had 10 targets. Justin Jefferson had 9 targets. And KJ Osborne had 9 targets. He was out there a ton. He was targeted a ton. And he actually impressed me on tape. I thought he played very well. So if this guy is on your dynasty waivers, absolutely go pick him up. Spend the fab you need to go get him because he looks like he can be a genuine, useful dynasty player down the line. And even though I don't think he has the highest ceiling, of course, he is going to be stuck behind these other two wide receivers in the short term. He was just valued so low and probably still is that I think he's worth it. He's a good enough talent that, you know, maybe with Thielen's eventual decline, he could step into that number two role and be very solid in this offense.
Yeah, I think it is an eventual decline, seeing as Thielen somehow is popping into the end zone
as if
he always was. But yeah, KJ Osborne is going to be on an offense that's going to be, I think, throwing a decent amount more than last year. And it's obviously going to benefit his target share.
Okay, let's move over now to some sells. Some guys that I think you should sell them now, trade them away, because their value is likely to go down compared to where it is right now. And the first guy, and probably the guy that I want to sell the most, and I'm not sure which of these Toby's going to agree with or not agree with. I know this is a guy he quite likes. That's Robbie Anderson on the Carolina Panthers. He is my number one sell right now because he did just sign that contract. I expect he's locked into this offense for quite a while, but my fear and my issue with Robbie Anderson is that the role that he played completely changed this week because of the arrival of Terrace Marshall. When I looked at this offense and the way that I expected these three players to line up, Terrace Marshall being that larger wide receiver, I expected him to be more on the outside, but it was important to remember that after Justin Jefferson entered the NFL last year, that slot role that he excelled so much out of, Terrace Marshall did the same thing in 2020. He took over that slot role and excelled. And he has continued to do that on the Carolina Panthers. He took that slot role from Robbie Anderson, and therefore Robbie Anderson was playing a role he was very familiar on the Jets. He was running very deep routes very often, spreading the field using his speed, and unfortunately that didn't turn into nearly as many targets. Absolutely, it is possible to see what we saw this week, and he can catch one bomb. And he could put up explosive performances. He only had three targets and only came down with one of those, but that one was an incredibly long touchdown. So clearly he does still have a very high ceiling, but the problem is in Terrace Marshall's first game, he did already out-target Robbie Anderson. And I definitely fear that if Robbie Anderson is thrust back into this spread the field role, he's just not going to see the upside that we saw last season where he exploded because he was getting so many more of those underneath targets. So that's why I feel like I would want to capitalize on the week one touchdown and move him now based off of the contract he just got and the touchdown he just got. And then I'll be, you know, mitigating that risk that he really is just going to go back to the role he had for the New York Jets.
Yeah, I'd like to argue because I was pretty excited to watch Robbie this year. But the thing is, let's say he bobbles that one target he ends up scoring the touchdown on. He goes from 12.7 fantasy points to a literal goose egg. And then it's this giant glaring red alarm bell.
Of course, yeah.
To move him now is the smart thing to do. It's more risky now to hold him and hope his role expands than try and get him off your team. Mm-hmm. So he's also a sell for me. I just begrudgingly say so.
Yes, I get it.
I was excited for him.
For sure. And the opposite is definitely possible. Like, he could catch all three of those targets and have monster games. But yeah, there's just a lot of risk now if he's in this new role. Because he's basically in the same role as the second guy on our list, and that's Christian Kirk. And these type of players can absolutely, occasionally, put up performances like Christian Kirk did this week. In week one, against the Tennessee Titans, Christian Kirk had 5 targets, 5 receptions, 70 yards, and 2 touchdowns for, in PPR, 24 fantasy points. Obviously, a pretty damn good day. And a big part of this is just he's going to be one of those boom or bust type of players, and I think it's smarter to sell that type of player after a big boom performance. It's fairly unlikely he's going to continue, although he absolutely will have some other big games this year. But beyond just that, Christian Kirk wasn't on the field as much as you would want him to be if he was going to be the like true number two target down the line. AJ Green looked pretty bad to me, but he was out there a decent amount, and then there was even the slight emergence of Rondale Moore, and they showed how they're going to use him in this offense, and that did come with a decent amount of targets for Rondale as well. He actually got 5 as well, so it was the same amount Christian Kirk did. And sure, those deeper targets are a little more valuable for fantasy, but I just don't view Christian Kirk at this point as being someone you're really ever comfortable starting. He's one of those guys who can blow up any week, but he's not much of a dynasty stalwart. So if I can use him in some sort of combination trade to upgrade my lineup elsewhere, I'm definitely willing to do that and hopefully capitalizing on that week one boom performance.
Just that big stat to have 2 touchdowns on 5 targets. It's not replicable on a week-to-week basis. And we understand that. And it's these big blow-up weeks that you want to capitalize on, especially at that week 1 to 4 kind of time frame. So, I'm sorry, Christian. And it's odd because he should be the wide receiver too.
Yeah, probably. At least right now. Like, he's second most talented guy on their roster. But yeah. I don't think that will last long term.
Moving over to a different position at running back, here's a guy you should sell.
Absolutely.
Melvin Gordon.
Yeah, Melvin Gordon actually put up a great performance.
He popped off. He really did.
Particularly in one run. He had a deep, long touchdown run where he was actually looking pretty quick. You know, he doesn't look quite like the aging, you know, slowing down running back that he in fact is. I couldn't believe
when he hit the corner and started breaking into open field. I was like, he's going to get tracked down. Never did.
Never did.
Nope.
But I would say, if I were to predict how this split would have gone in week one between Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon, I thought Melvin Gordon was going to get an even larger amount of work than he actually did. Melvin Gordon actually had slightly fewer rushes than Javonte Williams did, although he did see three targets to Javonte Williams' only one target. But knowing how good Javonte Williams is behind him, this feels absolutely like the moment to sell, because the rushing share will slowly skew more and more towards Javonte Williams, and I would not be surprised if by the end of the year this is the best performance Melvin Gordon puts up at any point. And so when you can look at him as a total committee guy who's getting half of the work and outproducing the rookie behind him, I think this is the ideal moment to sell him. He obviously impressed with that deep touchdown and probably is still somewhat useful for a few more weeks, but I just fear that he's one of these declining assets that if you get halfway through the season, their bye week comes in week 11, for example, then after that, at some point, as we saw with players like Cam Akers and DeAndre Swift last year, Javonte Williams is going to absolutely emerge. Melvin Gordon is going to lose so much of that work. And at that point, you're going to be sitting on a fairly dead asset. So right now, when he just put up a big performance and looked quite good doing so, feels like just the most ideal time to sell. I don't want to still have him on my roster come next week.
Gordon is an aging asset. Javonte Williams is as young as they come. Now's the time.
Yep. I definitely think it's worth it. Very much in the same vein.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, you only have one name written down, but I might actually have a couple for this team. You can disagree here, but...
Go ahead.
Mark Ingram. He's a sell for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Philip Lindsay, to me, is also a sell.
Interesting. I don't think you're getting anything for Philip Lindsay right now.
Okay, that's a fair point. I guess Mark Ingram did punch in the touchdown.
He also got a ridiculous amount of the rushing share.
He really did.
Yeah, Mark Ingram is the next guy I came up, and I think... he is in a similar vein to Melvin Gordon, that obviously he's just an aging guy who is the starter right now, but probably not for that long. And I think if people look at the stats that Mark Ingram just put up, 26 rushing attempts.
That's is unbelievable. I could not. It doesn't even make sense. It's also, just as a wild stat, Mark Ingram, running back for the Texans, touchdown. David Johnson, touchdown. Philip Lindsay, touchdown.
Mm-hmm. There are multiple reasons why this is going to be the best performance that Mark Ingram will put up all year. And number one is that, you know, you say three touchdowns. I think they're going to struggle to score three touchdowns in most weeks. They're not going to have this ridiculously good game script where they can just run all game. Because yes, Mark Ingram had 26 rushes. Philip Lindsay also had 10 rushes. Like, this is a team that was able to rush a ridiculous amount.
At will, seemingly.
And that says so much more about the Jaguars than it does about the Texans.
Yeah.
They're probably not going to be as bad as we thought they were going to be, but that does not change the fact that they're still going to be bad. Mark Ingram is 31 years old. He's clearly not going to be a running back you can rely on in the future. He's a win now type asset, except he's not really going to help you win that much. But that's the type of team you need to sell him to. Someone that thinks, okay, this can be a usable running back two or three, and he's at least going to get a solid amount of volume. My other argument for this is I don't actually think he's going to get that much volume, because if you watch that game and how it played out, on the Texans' first drive, Philip Lindsay was getting early work, and then in a play that actually got called back due to a penalty, he fumbled and lost the ball.
In the red zone.
In the red zone. It was very close to a touchdown, and he fumbled it. And from that point forward, that's when Mark Ingram really took over and got a crazy amount of the rushing share. I'm not sure that's going to persist game after game. I think Philip Lindsay is going to be way more involved than he was week one, and he was getting punished, put in the doghouse for that fumble, even though that fumble is not going to pop up on the stat sheet because it was taken away by a penalty. So I am absolutely not confident that Mark Ingram will see this crazy amount of rushing work. I don't think the offense will be good. I think they're going to have negative game scripts where they're going to have to use their passing down running back, David Johnson, a lot more than they're going to use Mark Ingram. So I really feel like, again, he's a guy, I don't want to have him on my roster by next week because I think this is the last chance you have to sell him at any sort of value.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, for Philip Lindsay, he's just not as valuable.
For sure.
You're just not going to get the returns you might want.
For Philip Lindsay, I honestly might wait and hope that next week it flips and he becomes a starter. And then,
sure,
when he puts up some good game, then I'm trying to sell him.
The only guy I would want is David Johnson, because I do think Tyrod Taylor is undervalued and he is the passing down back.
Sure.
To a small extent.
Still be really sad to ever have him starting in my lineup.
Oh, yeah, me too.
The final guy that I put on this list, and I already know Toby's probably not in 100% agreement with this one, is Jameis Winston. And I think this will come as a surprise to a lot of people because Jameis Winston just really impressed out on the field. He decimated the Packers, just tore them apart. And
5 touchdowns.
Yeah, the whole team did, really. It wasn't just Jameis. Jameis was totally fine, but the Saints dismantled the Packers. And what I fear by holding Jameis is that I don't think they look to be an offense that's going to put up a huge amount of volume. And I understand that this was the perfect game script to not have to throw that much. Like, clearly they could just continue to run because the Packers couldn't do anything on offense, and so they can just run out the clock forever because they were way, way ahead. Makes sense. They won 38-3. But in a game where Jameis Winston does end up passing for 5 touchdowns, he only attempted 20 passes and only completed 14 of those 20, which is a fine rate, but still. His yardage totals, he only passed for 148 yards. This is not the normal type of game to throw 5 touchdowns on. Like, that seems ridiculous. But the other parts of this team that make me fear he's not going to be an elite fantasy producer as he was in the past is that the Saints defense looks ridiculously good. And that was something, other than at the cornerback position, they did look like a very improved, great unit coming into the season. And they even just traded for Roby from the Houston Texans. So even their cornerbacks are starting to get short up. I think their defense will be ridiculously good. And he's not going to have to throw like crazy, come from behind all the time. So I fear that the passing volume is not going to be immense. Yet, he is probably viewed by most dynasty players right now as someone who can lead a pretty explosive offense, who just destroyed the Packers, put up nearly 30 fantasy points. I would rather pull my chips off the table at this point because I think the value you can get for selling him right now is worth putting my chips elsewhere and selling them for another quarterback that's similarly ranked that I have more confidence will be a dynasty producer long term.
Yeah, and I think that's a totally fine take. It's really how you spin this week one performance, because throwing 5 touchdowns on 14 completions is a bizarre percentage. That
it's incredible.
It really is. And all his decision making seemed on point, for him to throw no interceptions against what should be.
I will say he threw one really bad interception that was called back by a penalty. But the stat sheet is clean.
The stat sheet's clean, all right? The play never happened. I think that in terms of game script, no, it didn't make sense when the Saints were, I believe, up 30. I think it was 28-3 when he launched a 55-yard dime of a touchdown. I was like, my
to Harris?
God, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that Sean Payton understands Jameis Winston. I think right now if I'm going to put my money down, I think Sean Payton's going to win Coach of the Year. It's going to be big offensive turnover. He finally figures out how to harness Jameis Winston in a manner that allows him to showcase his just kind of gunslinging mentality in a manner that's going to help him out. I think Michael Thomas coming back, obviously, is going to be beneficial to Jameis.
That's true.
So I'm hesitant to sell him for anything less than what I think is capable of being a top 10 quarterback, which I would have never said, even up until this week one, when I'm starting to think, damn, if he can just be dumping it off to Kamara, doing these touch passes. It's a hard one for me to sell. I'm simply too excited about famous Jameis after that week one.
Yeah.
Even though it could totally be the right decision.
All of these arguments I spin as being why I think you can get a pretty, really good return for Jameis right now. Yeah, I get it. He has the potential to be a very solid starter for years to come. I just think he also has the potential, as he did in Tampa, to have truly atrocious games and to get pulled for Taysom Hill. Like, it's in his range of outcomes that you could be halfway through this season looking back at this moment and be like, how did I not sell him when I could have? So yeah, both are absolutely true.
I don't like Taysom Hill waiting in the wings just saying, hey.
I won you games last year. I can do it. Yeah, that is our list today, though. That is both our biggest buys and sells based off of week one, some week one trends for you guys. But before we close up the episode, as always, it is time for our Dynasty Buy of the Week. If you want to know how this game works, just look in the description of the episode. And it is Toby's turn to give me some hints. So Toby, what's your hint number one?
Hint number one, I'm a first round tight end, and I'm not Hayden Hurst.
That was the first name that came to mind. That's so funny. Yeah, okay. I know Toby loves this first round tight end, so I think it's a smart pick. It is Noah Fant.
You know what? I do love Noah Fant, but it's not him.
I would have been pretty proud to get that hint. Yeah.
Number two, I scored double-digit fantasy points this weekend in PPR.
Double-digit fantasy points. Okay. My guess for Toby saying that he gave me a lot of info right off the bat. First round tight ends, there's not that many of them. He's not going to give me someone like Hawkinson, so that I'm going to guess pretty early. That's my guess. I don't think it's that obvious. It's either going to be someone who's quite a bit older and it's been a while, so I wouldn't think of them necessarily as a, you know, first round tight end, or someone that's really underperformed, and you know their good performance this week went over my head. Like, for example, I remember David Njoku making a nice play. I don't think this is him, but he might have snuck his way to 10 fantasy points. So, you know, there's a possibility it's someone like that. This could be a guess that really outs my previous draft knowledge as being quite bad, because I can't remember if this guy was first round, second round, third round. I know it was one of those three. He was drafted alongside Aaron Hernandez. Is it Gronk?
It's not Gronk.
Do you remember how high Gronk was drafted?
No.
I know him and Aaron Hernandez were the same draft they came in. I think they were both first rounders or both second rounders. Either way, I feel like Gronk could have made sense because he looks like he'll be usable this year.
Hint number three. My rookie contract expires after this season, and it's unclear if I'll stay with my current team or not, especially considering my current team pretty recently gave a bunch of money to another tight end that's currently playing alongside me.
Hmm. Almost done his rookie contract and gave money. Again, those do point me a little bit towards David Njoku because, you know, he hasn't left yet despite talking about wanting to leave for years. And it wasn't that recently, but a couple of years ago, they did give Hooper a bunch of money. So it's possible it could be him. Yeah, sure. Let's go with David Njoku. Why not?
You've got it. David Njoku, get first round of the 2017 draft. He's 25 years old and he's number 85, was going to be your next hint. I don't know if you would have got that one. But David Njoku looked fantastic. He looked fantastic. Landry, I don't understand how this man is still playing. He seems old to me, but you know, he's still balling out.
He's not even old. He's like 27.
I know. I feel like he's just been there forever. OBJ's knee issue is going to be an issue. David Njoku is going to get work this season. He's only 25. If you haven't been up to date with the David Njoku weird off-the-field saga, it's nothing bad. It's just that he wanted off the Browns, then he's going to stay with the Browns and off the Browns. They just gave a bunch of money to Austin Hooper. I don't imagine him staying with the Browns this season or after the end of this season. And I imagine he's going to get a pretty great contract at a needy team for tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
He has the athletic measurables to succeed. He definitely passed the eye test week one for me. And I think now would be a good time to get him just while he's pretty under the radar.
So I don't hate it at all, and the thought is, and has been throughout this offseason, that we don't know what he's going to be right now in the short term, but a year from now, he absolutely could sign from somewhere. He's a great athlete. All that is absolutely true. But my question would be, so David Njoku did just produce the most of the three tight ends in their week one loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. Do you think that will continue throughout this season? Because if you don't, and you think he's going to have some dud games, his value might be lower in a couple weeks to, you know, still have the same upside on a different team.
I'm worried that he's not going to have as many dud games as he had when he had those injury-plagued seasons in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried that he's only going to become better this season.
Yeah. I mean,
Hooper sure didn't prove himself.
Yeah. Their targets for those tight ends, Harrison Bryan had 2, Hooper had 3, David Njoku had 5, and with those 5 targets, he did have 76 yards. So he did have a very solid week 1. I like him in general as a buy. I would be interested to see what the price would be on him. I don't think it would be too high. I think it would still be pretty cheap because he's generally seen as, you know, someone that's disappointed you as an early pick for years. So yeah, I think you can probably get him for pretty cheap, but it's going to vary from manager to manager. Just whoever has him in your league might value him very differently.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, but I like the upside because I do agree. He'll probably be on a different team and has opportunity to be a big riser in a year from now. Awesome, love it. Thanks for the Dynasty by Toby, and happy to have gotten that third guess.
Yeah, I wasn't confident. That was impressive.
Honestly, my thought was, I don't think Toby really likes Njoku. I don't think he would use him as a dynasty.
Listen,
back,
he's a Cleveland Brown. I dislike him, but pragmatism. You also said David Njoku's name in hint, too.
I did, just in passing. Yeah, he was on the mind, I suppose. The hint made sense. But yes, thank you all for listening. We will talk to you again next week. In between, I'm excited for another week of football.
Heck yeah.
Talk to you guys again then. Have a good one.
Peace.